listening to the Getting Smart podcast. I'm Mason Pasha. April is National Poetry Month, and if you're familiar with Getting Smart, you know that we love poems. We tend to start all of our town halls with a poem. I believe doing this gets at something that neuroscientists call cathedral mind, which is being more creative in rooms with high ceilings. In lieu of a cathedral, we're in a virtual space, so we like to think about big ideas and abstract thoughts before we get going, just to make the room a little more creative. I was interested in having a conversation about what it looks like to have both a life in the arts and a life of the arts, and how schools and education systems can better adapt to these and help learners prepare for them. I figured there's no better person to talk to than our friend Timothy Jones, a longtime educator, coach, mentor, and someone who lives and breathes hip-hop by being the chief visionary officer at Hip Hop Head. Timothy is also the founder of Techniques for Learning, a company dedicated to utilizing hip-hop and culturally relevant pedagogy to develop and implement strategies, curriculum, and activities to improve teacher-student engagement for schools, universities, education organizations, and community-based organizations. Tim, thanks for joining me today.
Pleasure to be here, Mason, and always glad to spend time with you.
I think I'm going to start off with, just as I just said, a poem. This is one, because we're going to be talking about the process of craft today, I'm going to read one that I wrote, and we can kind of respond to it. So I'm going to read it once, maybe just respond to anything that stood out to you. When I used to teach poetry to students, I would say, identify a moment that surprised you. And I think that that's a really interesting way of accessing this art form. And then I can talk a little bit about maybe where it came from, and we can go from there. All right. So this poem is called, What Exactly is an Executive Producer? Slow zoom out, two women walking. From the impossible bottom, the first names and the back row man claps hesitantly. Then too much. Another joins in out of time. If every wing flap clapped, the bench broiling pigeons, the hummingbird, the loon low flying to flatten the sea, and not to mention the dragonfly, more wings than a hospital. Perhaps then we'd know this occasion to cheer, as common as breathing, as loud as a life.
Now, so, what I heard was this transition from my initial thought to one of the production being life and nature. That on the onset, with the title being executive producer and knowing the work that you do, I was expecting it to go there. But I also love the play on wings from the various animals and having more wings than a hospital, because our healing, as opposed to it being inside of the wings of a hospital, can really be found if we become truly participatory with the orchestra that is life. So it was this inside, outside dynamic, and then even referencing hummingbirds. So that means that there is a rhythm. And even with the wing movement, the clap, that's a beat. So it connects to our hearts. So when you're really looking at your poem and executive producer, I walk away with the question, like, who do you consider to be your executive producer? Are you your own executive producer? Do you believe that God is your executive producer? Like, who is your executive producer? And then that in turn would say a lot about what you feel like your contribution or end result would be to the rhythm that is life holistically.
I love it. Thank you. There's new reads in there that I hadn't thought about before. So that's the best thing about poetry often. So this poem came from a couple different places, which I think some people view it as a crime for an artist to talk about what something means, but I don't think it necessarily is what it means as much as where it came from. And that those are different to me. So it came from two places. One, we were on a call at work and somebody on my team was talking about how they were a cheer coach, and they would make all of their students go take football classes from the football team so they understood the game. So it wasn't just this thing where they were just on the sidelines. And they said something along the lines of, I had to help them know when to cheer. And then somebody else indicated like, oh, that sounds like that would be a good line for a poem, which Tom always loves to throw it at me and say, like, Mason, put that in a poem. So there's this idea of the occasion to cheer. And I sat down to sort of just parse through what that was. And there were these moments where it was like this identifying like this is a moment deserving of cheering. But then this image of like birds clapping all the time, like every time they're flying, it was this other image where it was like every moment is this occasion to cheer. And then the opening image was this, what exactly is an executive producer? I think whenever I'm in a movie, they flash up executive producer, like either at the top or at the end, whatever has more importance. And I think almost no one knows what that role means. I don't even, and I love movies. Like I think it totally changes depending on the project. So I started with this like image of sort of watching the credits of a movie. But it's this idea of an executive producer is a hilarious, it's both a hilarious and profound idea to unpack. And it's just something that we always see and we ascribe weight to, but we never really think about what that means.
But, you know, just even building off of what you said, that is starting off, if you're starting off and it's a movie, so then it's starting off with something that you're watching. But then as the poem progresses, it's something that you still are watching, but now you can visually see what role you can actually play in being a part of. So it starts, you're thinking about it, it starts inside in the dark. We could even take it to the embryo becoming the baby is inside in the dark. Well, who's the executive producer? We know one of the a couple of the producers are, you know, the mother and father, but who's the executive producer? And even then when those credits run, that baby comes, it's now stepping outside and it gets to interact and be a part of what they were once sitting and observing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thanks for humoring me on reading the poem. I am curious for you. So one thing I want to just sort of continue anchoring around today is this this impetus towards contribution rather than consumption with art, right? Like it's this nudge to make something rather than just consume. And both are beautiful. Everybody should be both in some capacity and is in some capacity. But for you, when do you feel like you had that first nudge towards the creation rather than appreciation?
The most notable one, I would say, started in 1996. It was me starting to work in an after-school program, but more importantly, I got with an organization called Writers Corps that was part of AmeriCorps, and we had to teach creative writing to students. And as opposed to becoming a student reading books and studying other individuals' craft, I started to create my own. And I created a curriculum called Beat to the Rhyme. And what I would do is take certain songs, and I just started writing activities or prompts to either extend the meaning, lift up a particular meaning, and then with the students, we just started writing. And as opposed to just giving general feedback to my students' work, I started writing back to them. So I created this buffer, a huge Transformers fan, and I loved what Optimus Prime stood for. And when I looked at the word Optimus, the name Tim was in the middle. And so if you spell it O-P-T-I-M-U-S, I interpreted it as it's the opportunity in time for us. So from this point on, call me Optimus. So that became my personal mantra every day as I went and started doing this with the students. And it wasn't until the end of the year that I let them know, even though some of them had kind of figured it out, because it would be like, well, who's Optimus? Like, hey, you know, just keep studying. We'll let you know at the end of the year. And it was at the end of the year that I told them that Optimus was me. And their encouragement to me, truthfully, is part of the catalyst that even has me here today.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love the dialogue component of that. That's really beautiful. I think that's been something that I've learned too, is just putting out, I started this process of I have to ship a poem weekly or a song and just put it out to this like audience. And there's beginning to be, and from the beginning it's expressed in different ways, but like the response to things is such a critical part of creation, especially when it then inspires someone else to make something after the fact. It's this kind of radical momentum of creating there. It's like almost a culture of reciprocity, just at that level. So do you continue to record rhymes that you make?
Not that way, because we were actually making songs. So at this point it may be whether we're in a cipher that gets recorded. So I'm not in the studio. I think about it from time to time. What would it sound like? What would I want to do? What would I want to say? It's been a minute.
So one thing that I've always loved about both poetry and hip hop, I think specifically, is both when you're participating in them, like when you're listening to somebody else's rhyme or you're reading poetry, I think it fundamentally changes how you see things around you. And some of that is just the power of metaphor, right? Like if you hear something being like or as, like simile or non, as something else, you start to see it differently. I'm curious, when you're freestyling, do you feel like your perception of things changes before, during, or after you put language together?
So I think it's having some things prescribed already there, being open to what comes up in the moment, and then having the confidence to be at peace with what the result is. Because there's always a reflection. And in this instance, the reflection is probably more feeling than actual words, because it's a freestyle. I can't necessarily go back and dissect every line that I said. Certain lines I'll remember and hold on to, but it's more so the overarching, how did I feel when I was doing that?
That reminds me a lot. I think something I've always loved about poetry is the ways it handles space and invites space, whether that's through a line break, or I remember hearing folks talk about poetry as you're basically like in a dance with the white space. So if you have something good to say, you better work really hard to say it. And I've actually, like, if you do this is like a very small craft thing, but like if you write a line your text, it is harder to write a long line than if you left a line your text. It feels like you are like affronting the white space in a really interesting way. But I love the way that the space in poetry, whether that be like the interpretive space or the actual musical space, invites in this other, you called it maybe the spirit, but it's whatever is moving the person while they're reading it, whether that be the writer or the audience. It's a beautiful invitation to engage with something and bring your own experience, or a more universal experience. Do you have any interest in giving us a freestyle and then we can kind of talk about it. I've been thinking a lot about placemaking lately. So something about maps or location or home.
Okay.
I think anything in that lexicon would be interesting.
Life can be viewed as a race where we start to contemplate our place. Is it our place or our pace that sets that tone? Think about all the things that we do when we try to prepare a place that we want to call home. And then we get fixated with a throne for us to take a position. And then we try to observe our kingdom. But are we really dumb to think that we truly are a king of anything that is a part of this thing called life? And then when we want to talk about place, is it a place that we design or is the place designing us? If we talk about the interior and we're painting the walls, are we really painting the physical walls or are our experiences altering the interior of our inner walls, whether it's the walls of our minds or our heart? And then when we say we're going to live, are we living understanding that the place impacts the art? And then, or is it the art shapes the place? And then what happens when this place brings trauma? What happens when this place brings trauma and drama, or is the result of something that we should reflect on as karma based upon sowing and reaping? Is the place the ground? Is your place fertile where the words can be seeds that will die to proceed a bloom? Is this place something that becomes all consuming, or are you just consuming and not creating? Do you understand how to build? Do you understand the importance of the foundation? What is your chief cornerstone of your place? Your body is a temple, so you always are occupying space in a place. So instead of living life as a race, you need to find that pace so that you can keep up.
That was great. I think the you mentioned this idea of a place being the things that make it up, rather like what informs the place, or does the place shape you, or do you shape the place? Which I think is something that has been circling my head this whole conversation, as to even just like, what is the resource material you pull from to create, but hadn't been said. So it's fun to see it show up in that way, which is like, it's a thing that we didn't even talk about really name, but it's just orbiting and fits in. So I think that's a beautiful thing about that. Love the circular shape of it as well, which like, if you're thinking about a race, it's on like a racetrack, you came back around to the race and the pace, which I think was a cool arc. And then I'm a sucker for fertile and fertile soil, so that's a resonant image for me. I love it. Do you have any reflections on that process or anything you want to shout out? Is just like,
well, you know, I have to shout out my wife, Vanessa. She has been really focused on getting ready for this spring to garden. And she's been watching videos and ordering stuff to build seed beds and taking things out to the yard and looking at the map and the almanac, like when is going to be the last frost. And yesterday was a relatively warm day here, so she was able to go out into the yard with some cardboard and mulch and start doing things. So that was there. Also, we had talked about ministering and the parable of the sower, where the word is actually the seed. And so when the seed falls on good ground in your heart, it actually produces fruit. And then also, biblically, Christ is the chief cornerstone. And so when you have a physical structure, there was always that chief, what is that cornerstone that holds your foundation and your house together. So those things were coming, as well as the metaphor of the pace and the race, because in the background, without volume, SportsCenter is on. And they are in Indianapolis for the football combine. So they time your 40. And so it's pulling on all of those things, but I appreciate the opportunity to reflect, because in the reflection, it makes it make more sense. I think sometimes we view improvisation, and in this context, freestyling, as this abstract thing, when if you sit back and reflect, these are all real things that are either happening now, things that are important to me. So when I am given this liberty to ignite my mind will tend to be ignited and begin to surf through different data that is there. So then the question you have to ask yourself is, what data point remains that you consider valuable enough that in a moment you're going to bring to life?
Yeah, I think that the interesting thing about the pause for reflection is you end up learning something more about you than the piece, which I think is very important about like freestyle, like jazz, anything like that. If you pause afterwards to reflect on it, it tells you a lot about you. And it's not like, oh, this piece is saying this. It's just like you learn something in the process. Do you have, we're a little bit removed now from the actual freestyle, but is there a moment that you can remember from that, just like in your head, where you had one of those departures that you willingly took that came up and you were like, I'm going to chase that one?
No, this was actually, I think a higher level of focus. So there really wasn't a departure. It was the freedom to be able to connect whatever came up to the theme.
But so my last question for you is around what do you think that you've learned from this experience that you would hope others could learn from an experience similar in their own life, whether that be learners in school? Like, what would the environments be that would facilitate, whether it's the relationship you have to failure, not being failure? Or I think that there's some things that I've certainly learned from the process that I would love for others to learn.
I would say, if I had to narrow it down to one takeaway, to have the confidence in your ability to communicate your thoughts. And that would be whether you are a student in a learning space, the educator in the learning space, whether you're at work having conversations. It's having the confidence in your ability to have a thought and to be able to convey it in a way that you feel confident you're getting across what you want to get across.
I think that's pretty succinctly the role of an executive producer.
There you go.
I think we found it. I think we did it.
There you go. There you go. That's the remix to the poem.
Yeah, exactly. The remix. Well, that's great. Tim, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for tuning in to the Getting Smart podcast today. We want this podcast to be actionable, insightful, and a great way to learn about what's next in learning. In order to stay on the cutting edge, we need people in the field to tell us what they're hearing, what they're wanting, and what they're needing to learn more about. Got a topic or a guest in mind? Send your recommendations to me, Mason@gettingsmart.com. And if you like what you're hearing, don't forget to leave a review in Apple Podcasts or subscribe wherever you listen. Feel free to share the podcast on social media using the hashtag GSPodcasts. Thanks so much. Thank you.